Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduit-inc.com for all your custom publishing needs. If they ain't biting, catch them with content. Guys, today's podcast, I'm going to try a little something different. As I am crazy traveling on the road, I thought, you know, as I get around this world, maybe I ought to do a little soapbox for you, a little song and dance for you, and talk to you all a little bit about kind of the state of the industry, where I think things are, and specifically the state of selling and how I believe passionately that the B2B selling process has changed. And obviously it's changed because of a variety of variables, most likely or most, you know, clearly is technology and what that has done to the buyers. You know, our selling process, the B2B selling process, has changed so dramatically because the buying process has changed. And so one of the things that I thought I would take the time today and talk to you a little bit about is the fact that we buy in our personal lives based on lifestyle. If you go out to buy a shirt or a golf club or even a car for that matter, the risk is really not that great. It all falls upon your own personal shoulders. So if you buy something and you feel like you've paid too much for it, or the product is faulty or it doesn't work out in your favor, it all falls on you. And you know, these purchases in our personal lives are done in a way that enhances what our personal lives. It's a lifestyle. We want to look better. We want to hit the ball further. We want to drive faster. We want to look cool or whatever it is. It's all personal lifestyle, but it is our own decisions. Now, honestly, those decisions in our personal lives are ultimately made based on the influences of our peers, friends and family. And, you know, if I'm playing golf or driving a car and I see one of my peers has a better golf club or a nice pair of shoes or whatever it is, that might have some influence. Just like if somebody says to you, your best friend says to you, listen, you got to go see that movie. You know, that movie that just came out is unbelievable. Or that book that I just read, it's so cool. It's a page turner. You've got to read it. And so it's amazing that in our personal lives, where we are buying for lifestyle, we are buying for certainly human need, right? We buy food and clothes for necessity, but there's a lot of other stuff that's bought based on how we perceive ourselves or how we want to be perceived or how the outside world perceives us. And so we buy based on that lifestyle, combined with the fact that we are heavily influenced by our peers or the icons in our lives, the brands that are important in our lives. If we are all fans of, you know, Jordan Spieth or Tiger Woods, you know, we may wear their same shoes or hit their same golf ball. And don't get me wrong, I've played golf once in 2 years, so I don't know why I keep doing the golf reference, but I think you follow me, and that is that, you know, there are influences in our lives, in our personal lives, that allow us to buy a certain way, or why we buy a certain way. And so those influences and those motives are one thing. But the other part is the lack of risk, the lack of, shall I say, concern around culpability. When I make that buy, if I bought that, and I guess apparently I'll stick with this stupid analogy, but when I, when I buy that golf club and it doesn't work the way I want, that's on me. And it's probably a risk that I'm willing to take. So let's transfer over to the B2B process, where buyers are making purchases for the business, for the corporation. And that's a very, very different buy. Certainly there are remarkable influences on the buy, from bosses to committees to competitors to sellers. There's a lot of influences on the buy, similar to our personal lives. And that, you know, you can't get away from. And but the bigger piece here is that when we buy in the B2B process, when a buyer has to make a purchase, they are doing it for livelihood reasons, not lifestyle, but livelihood. And why that's a critical difference is that this goes to motivation for your buyers. They're buying to enhance their job, enhance their value within the organization. They're buying or making decisions to cover themselves, do right by them, by themselves in the eyes of the boss. Many times they make decisions so that they don't stick their neck out on the line. You know, they're covering their ass, so to speak. And so it's a big deal when we look at the B2B process. And we all, as sellers in this world, sales and marketing people in this world, who sell B2B, have to start to dissect the buying process and analyze the trends that are going on. And so when you look at the B2C world and you look to the B2B world, there are some similarities, and I'll get to those in a second, but the first thing is you look at the motivation. The second thing you look at is the influences. And so there is a very, very big difference between the way we buy. And the number one thing that I think everybody should take away is that it is safety. I think I had a podcast with Dr. Colby Jubenville a couple months ago, and he was talking about safety. And it really, really is fascinating. Think about it this way. In a lot of cases, the responsibility is so large and has such impact on a buyer. If they make a mistake buying something for the organization and it falls squarely on their shoulders, this is now about livelihood. This is about, holy smokes, I could get fired. So the difference is I buy the golf club. It doesn't work. Big deal. That's on me. I'm not going to lose my job over it. But if I make this decision in the buying process, there's consequences. And maybe they're not. You know, obviously, I've talked about this in the past. I feel like corporations have not created an environment where people can make mistakes. And, you know, we all kind of stick our heads under the desk and don't want to get noticed, and we fear for our jobs, and we say, gosh, I don't want to stick my neck out on the line. I don't want to make a decision that gets me in trouble. And so that creates kind of a paralyzed culture. And the reality is that greatness and excellence and progress comes from pushing the envelope, being kind of a renegade, if you will, thinking outside of the box. And so it's a weird dichotomy that we've got going on in the B2B buying world. And that is that they really don't want to make that purchase and put themselves in harm's way. It's a livelihood purchase. So they get a lot of people involved. Now, the second piece here, the next piece here to consider in the B2B process is that by virtue of multiple studies, you could argue from 2/3 to 3/4 of the buying process in the B2B sector is complete before human interaction takes place. And why that is important and why that is a jaw dropper You know, if you're listening out there, that should be a jaw dropper for you. If you're a seller and you take that in, your jaw should be on the floor right now. Two-thirds, three-fourths, let's just call it 70% of the buying process in the B2B process. In the B2B buying process, 70% of that process is complete before human interaction takes place. And the reason that's a jaw dropper is that we, as an industrial-aged mindset, industry, country, for that matter, economy, have always used human interaction in the B2B process at the top of the funnel. And the world has told us that not only do they not want to see us at the top of the funnel, they have all the tools at their disposal to keep that from happening. So let's break that down a little bit more succinctly here. If the buying process is a step-by-step process of moving someone from unaware of who you are, unaware of your product, your solutions, moving them simply from unaware to aware, and then from aware to a level of interest, and then from kind of being interested to a desire to actually purchase and try something, to maybe a final culminating place called adoption or partnership. I think we can all kind of agree that that's a fairly remedial process, but it works for us. And so what I'm here to tell you today is that it's not until you've actually passed the step where they're interested that human interaction takes place. And what that means is business-to-business buyers are going through great self-discovery, just like in our personal lives in the B2C world. So the B2C world and the B2B world have very, very different motivations, but their processes are starting to mirror each other. Because in the B2C world, if I go buy any widget, shirt, golf club, whatever you call it, I may never have to have any human interaction. I could buy it on Amazon.com and that's it. And I can even return it without having human interaction. So we're comfortable with that in this day and age in our personal lives. But in the B2B process, they've adopted a lot of that. You have a new age of buyer coming in. You have a new level of technology that allows people to cocoon themselves. You know, I've probably said it a million times on this program and written about it, that if someone calls you and you look at the number and you don't recognize it, you're not going to answer. Just like the gazillion emails that you get every morning and you delete them. You know, you sit, it's the first thing you do. You wake up and you delete 12 emails that you know in the flash, the blink of an eye, are spam. You don't trust them. You don't know them. And so we have all this technology in that cocoons us. Even if we text somebody these days, they don't respond immediately because they might have other things going on or they simply don't want to. So everything is at our disposal to block out intrusions. It used to be in yesteryear that you had a gatekeeper, a secretary, who you had to try to finagle your way past, you know, whether it's dropping a box of candy on their desk or what have you, but you had to do everything you could to get through that gatekeeper just to have the opportunity to talk to someone who had the purchasing decision. Today, you don't need that gatekeeper because the technology is all there. And so they don't want to be intruded. They have the tools that don't allow you to get in. And quite honestly, they're going through the self-discovery phase. It's they're going to get themselves to a point where they realize that, you know, why should I change? They're going to go through that internally. You know, maybe the company's got a lot of growth and all of a sudden the capacity has changed in terms of the stuff that they're putting out and they need some help. You know, maybe the variables within the business are starting to force them to look inwardly and say, we need some change. That impetus for change occurs organically within the organization. It occurs with the people. And so then they go through a self-discovery as to what else is out there. They need to find you, essentially. And so once they get to a level of interest, they say, gosh, you know, I need to make this change, make this, I'm going to need to make an investment. They get past a level of interest or they get past a level of understanding. And that's when they say, okay, now I need to choose somebody. And so the big challenge for all of us is when they do call us, are they calling us for the almighty bake-off? Are they basically saying, look, I already know what I want? Is it like when they go on the car lot and they say, look, I know what car I want. I know what features I want. Here's the price I'm going to pay, and you let me know. And unfortunately, we don't want to be in that position anymore. And so we want to be in a position where when they call us, that the human contact is an elevation. It's another level of sophistication. It extends the brand. You know, I don't think any of us want to sit there and none of us are paid as salespeople to simply take a request. I mean, to answer the question, price and availability. That's not us. We are thoughtful. We are passionate. We want to have a conversation. And so I think the lesson here is that the B2B world has changed and your selling process overall must change. It has to mimic the change that's going on with the buyers. You know, I read a book by this guy, Ben Sass. He's a senator out of Nebraska. And he talks about the fact that there's been four economies in the history of our world. And the first one being hunting and gathering. The second one being agricultural age, right? Which is dig a hole, plant a seed. That's a day and age when someone worked on the farm and, you know, the son worked on the farm. The family lived on the farm, they worked on the farm. There was no separation between family and work. And, you know, if you were a farmer, your son was going to be a farmer. And so that gave way to the industrial age. And the industrial age was obviously when the machines came along, there was some separation between work and family. There was, you know, dad went off to work and, you know, he came home late at night and maybe he worked in this steel mill or the printing company or the paper company. There was also a very good chance still that if dad worked in some occupation that you know, the son would follow or the family would follow. And so now we're in a different age. And I think everybody collectively understands that. I don't know what to call it. We've called it the connection age. Some people call it the information age. Whatever it is, it's a different place. Manufacturing has obviously dramatically moved out of this country, and technology has taken a lot of roles. And so we're clearly in a different world in terms of how you define it. And yet our economy's recipe for engagement, our selling engagement, has really not changed that much. And so even though the technology, I mean, even the commercial printing world has dramatically changed from offset lithography to digital imaging, but even more so, the commercial printers, as they were once defined, are now selling everything from packaging, wide format, ad specialty, design services, you know, print management software. It's amazing what this industry has morphed into. And so the solutions and the offering that we've provided have changed dramatically, but our recipe for engagement has not. And so understand that buying process, that top two-thirds or three-fourths of the funnel, has to be treated differently. There has to be something done differently within that world. And marry that with the fact that, you know, we're in a different age and we're selling different solutions. We probably demand a new recipe. And then one other piece to that is the fact that historically in the B2B world, sales and marketing have always been at odds. They have always been at odds. I used to, it's amazing, it's been 10 years, but I used to work for a large organization. And I remember saying to my boss at the time, I was in marketing, I had said to him, I'm really concerned about where marketing stands versus sales. And, you know, and he said, you know, that's sales is clearly above marketing. And I was a little bit distraught by that. And he went on to say, you know, marketing is basically just sales support. And that's not true. It's absolutely emphatically not true. And if any of us go out and start any kind of business, we're going to do some market research. We're going to have some market insight, whether that's just the remedial and anecdotal evidence that we have through conversation, or if we have heavy stats, we are going to do marketing type work. We're going to understand the world, and then before we go out and create a solution. And so marketing and sales have always kind of been at odds. And in the printing industry, heck, there's not really that many marketing people in the industry. And it is, and that's tough. And what happens, whether it's printing or any industry, you know, that becomes a little bit of a war in the boardroom, if you will. And that can't happen for success. You know, the marketing department can't sit there and go, hey, boss, you know, man, we gave the sales department so many great leads and, you know, they just didn't close them. Well, that can't happen anymore. And the sales department might say, oh, those leads they gave us, they sucked, you know? And so you can't have that. In the perfect world, there is tremendous synergy. There is a marketing backbone. They are so adored that the sales people are bringing all that data and feedback and customer knowledge back, and it's going into a central repository, if you will, so that the company as an entity can not only understand the marketplace better, but can react more swiftly. And you have a marketing department that is working at nurturing that top two-thirds of the funnel, or that top three-fourths of the funnel. So I think that's what I'm getting at, is that I think the new recipe is where the selling organization and the marketing organization are one, that the people that are within that are almost like managing editors, that they are, in fact, creating content, because a sales call is content. But there's a different way to kind of do that. It is being able to reach out to the world in an unbiased, unselling manner, collect the stories, the data, and endear yourself to that market by sharing it in a creative way and allowing them to find you, whether that's taking a thought leadership role or just being a great storyteller via print or via online or whatever it is. The custom publishing process is in fact the new way to nurture that market, that community, the relationships. But the salespeople need to be embedded within that, because when the handoff comes, there's actually not a handoff. I don't like to look at it as a handoff. That's probably a bad way that sales and marketing should look at anything. But when the client or prospect reaches out and says, you know, I did a lot of discovery. I found you. I'm interested to know more. The actual human that interacts has already been kind of involved in that process and goes, oh yeah, we've been waiting for your call kind of deal. And so I think it's a really exciting time for all of us to start to think about changing this process. We're working with some really, really cool organizations on doing this right now. We've had, you know, knock on wood, we've had some really cool successes. So I think that it's an exciting time, and I'll leave you with this, and that is the jobs report that came out in 2015, I think it was, said, and it was for like the next 5 or 6 years. They said, look, there's two jobs that will emerge. Every other job in the world is getting changed and moved around and altered and the like. They said there's two jobs that will emerge. And the first one is data analysts. And if you think about that, that's kind of like the listening piece. That's being able to listen to the marketplace and understand the marketplace. And the second job that was going to emerge was specialized salespeople. And that means that the people, the human interaction that's going to take place in that B2B process is going to be special. It's going to be a specialized group. It's going to be, all right, now that we've already done our self-discovery and we found out that we're interested, now I want to engage, and I'm going to engage with a type of person that is impassioned, that is knowledgeable, that is into constant learning, that elevates my understanding to another level. And so it really is a remarkable time for us. And then one last little piece is that if you think about the publishing process, it's always a very, very unbiased way to talk to people. And, you know, knocking on doors is hard. So I talked to a guy a few weeks ago. I was traveling, and he said to me, you know, 5 years ago I would have told you that I cold call, and I cold call like crazy. And I would have told you that with great bravado and kind of a badge of honor. You know, like I can do the stuff that nobody wants to do. And he said, but today I tell you I cold call because I don't know what else works. Even if I cold call 100 people and one person gives me a sliver of attention, it's at least some sort of response. And I'm telling you that there's a new and different and more creative way that is really, really hungry for passionate and creative salespeople. So that is the conclusion of my little podcast and, shall I say, rant. But I appreciate you guys listening. Call us if you've got any questions or feedback. I'd love to hear from you, but I thought this would be fun as I sit in my lonely hotel room. So I hope you guys are all doing really, really well. We've got lots of opportunity in this industry. Do not forget that. I know that the times are kind of weird, and there's emotion and in some cases some anger and some confusion, but I still believe there's a lot of love in this world. And I believe that there's a lot of productive and positive people. And specifically, I think there's a lot of love and productive and positive people in our industry. So just continue to be the buffalo and stay in touch with us. All the best to you. Take care. Guys, thanks so much for listening to Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. I appreciate you listening to my rant on B2B selling. I hope you took a nugget or two, or maybe it made you think a little bit. It was a lot of fun just kind of sitting around and sharing some of my thoughts, and I appreciate you guys taking the time to listen. A reminder that this podcast was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated. Visit www.conduitincorporated.com conduit-inc.com for all your custom publishing needs. Remember, if they ain't biting, catch them with content. So until next time, thanks for listening and be the buffalo.